Good evening, everyone. This is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. It's 9 p.m. Eastern, and we are on the Chlamydia Safety Call. Now, if we just have Captain John.
Is he here?
I don't see him.
Uh-oh.
Captain John. There he is, Captain John, the man of the hour.
Yoo-hoo! What's up, everybody? How you doing tonight, kiddies? All right. We're going to go into the sheriff portion of the course tonight, but that's a long section, so we won't get through it all in one evening. However, I did want to talk about a topic of current interest and possibly the most important thing that's happened in our fight since we all began, and that is that Rod Class won his case before the United States Supreme Court, and that is huge. That is big time, mega huge. To those of you that may not be familiar, I'll give you a quick synopsis. Rod Class is, in my opinion, the statutory master. Nobody does statutes and codes better than Rod Class. Rod Class, with his brother, started this fight 23 years ago as a couple of hicks out of North Carolina. Now, Rod is, I know he's in his 70s. I'm not sure if it's lower, upper, or middle 70s, and I know he's got some health issues when he got into this. But he started getting into working the law. He is very familiar with common law. He knows exactly what common law is about. He's very familiar with the National Liberty Alliance. So he had been teaching statutory stuff for quite a long time. He's got his radio broadcast on AIB radio at Talk Shoe, for those that are familiar. I got into learning what I know starting with Rod Class about 7 years ago. So he was how I got my feet wet, cut my teeth, and got into game. So it had always been his dream to get into the federal court in Washington, D.C. And for years and years and years and years, he filed paperwork, and just like we experienced with the National Liberty Alliance, they just ignored him and wouldn't let him play. They wouldn't let him in the playground. So as things do happen, he was on business in Washington, D.C., and, of course, he's big on the Second Amendment, and he's a concealed carry guy. And he had his guns with him when he pulled into Washington, D.C., and for some reason, they either, I don't remember the exact details, but he got stopped. And they arrested him for possession of a gun. And so this began this long saga. And so there were two gun charges. And so through the evolution of this case, Rod laid out the entire fraud of the U.S. Inc. I mean, lock, stock, and barrel, with every I dotted and every T crossed. And all of that is in this case in the public record. Interestingly enough, the Supreme Court sealed that record. So Rod gets into this case, and he starts playing the game, and there's parry and thrust, and he just beat the crap out of him. He beat the bejesus out of him, working with the chief judge of the federal court in Washington, D.C. It don't get no deeper than that. That's the top of the food chain. And one thing led to another. And as the case wound down, and of course thousands of us were following it, and thousands of us have copies of the case files, so it's not like a big secret. It ain't hard to find. Because they couldn't beat Rod Clash in any way, shape, or form, they cheated and threatened him with a brand new charge, completely unrelated to anything. It was total horse hockey for treason. It was a terrorism charge. It was, you know, your Homeland Security horse hockey. And he would be facing 22 years in jail. So as the case wound down, you may recall, and I forget his name, although the name Williams pops up, there was a black guy in Chicago on the south side who took issue with Chicago's gun laws. And he sued. And he won. And all of that crap went out the window. Well, with that crap went one of Rod's gun charges. It just went boom, gone. It's gone. But instead of adhering to that, they arrested Rod. This is during the case. They arrested Rod down in North Carolina where his house is, and then they put him on a federal prison transport bus and drove him around for about 16 hours sucking diesel fumes and took his medication away. And then they threw him in jail, and he did not have his medication for quite a few days. He's got heart issues as well as leg issues, obviously other issues that I just don't recall at the moment. And they tried to kill him. So as we come down to the wire, Rod pleads. He takes, you know, it's a plea bargain. So Rod pled guilty to the one gun charge with the threat of this whole new trial and whole new charge over terrorism hanging over his head. But what was really, really unique, and this gets to what the Supreme Court case was all about, is that it has been argued by the federal prosecutor that when you do a plea bargain, his position was that automatically means that you waive all your rights to an appeal. And, of course, Rod was very careful, because he's a slick guy. He's a fox, in making sure that he maintained the right to appeal. And, in fact, the federal judge that presided over the case did say that Rod had the right to appeal. Well, that's just leaving the door to the chicken coop open for Rod. So he came back, and the argument, of course, again, is, as I mentioned, do you have the right to appeal after copying a plea bargain? And I listened to the entire hour presentation by Rod's lawyer to the Supreme Court. I listened to every minute of it. And so let me bring that up. So the decision came down February 21st, I believe, 6-3 in favor of Rod, that he did have the right to appeal. And let's see here, Roberts, C.J., Ginsburg, Sotomayor, Kagan and Gorsuch and J.J. And Gorsuch, I believe, let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yep, voted in favor. Alito, J.J., Alito, Kennedy, and Thomas voted in dissent. So this is huge. This is absolutely mega freaking huge. I know that you may be asking yourself, you know, well, it's all about, okay, so it says here, when Rod talks about the contract, he's referring to the plea agreement. Also, Rod mentions to Judge Roberts in the call, one of the four judges and the last judge in Rod's original federal district court gun case was Richard W. Roberts, and I love this part, who decided to retire after his frustrating time presiding over Rod's gun case. The other Judge Roberts is obviously Chief Judge and Chief Justice of SCOTUS, John G. Roberts. And so I did a post up on our Illinois NLA Facebook page that has all the links, but this was all about Rule 11, which was mentioned in the oral argument. And Rule 11 is signing pleadings, motions, and other papers, representations to the court, and sanctions. So you can get into this if you're hearing this for the first time or you want to do a catch-up. You can find that post at our NLA Illinois Facebook page. I will try to get it up on our Committee of Safety page. But getting back to my other thought there, and that is, you know, well, what does this all mean? If this Supreme Court case was about his ability to plead, well, that's really, it's a good question, but it's the wrong question to ask. It doesn't have much of anything to do with our freedom to ask about his right to appeal. What it has to do with is his 3 years of case file in which Rod got into the public record the entire fraud of the USA from square one to square last. I mean, it's all there. You know, it's been a while since I went through this list. I don't remember, but it's the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, 1933 Bankruptcy Act, 1935 Social Security Act. The 1940, there was something that I just can't remember. 1945, the International Organizations Immunity Act were the basis of my legal studies for quite a few years. And it is all in there. It is all in there. I mean, every stroke of the pen is another fraud exposed. I mean, our NLA paperwork is awesome. I mean, incredibly awesome, but it's coming from the common law standpoint, and that we are impeccable. You cannot chew us at all on our documents, and ditto for Rod Class going the statutory route. And so that's an incredibly big win for the good guys, because that's putting them on the ropes here. And it also tells me, and I was shifting to my opinion mode for a moment, and it is my opinion that the timing is never a coincidence. There's a reason why this decision was handed down now, and it has everything to do with the plan and the White Hats and Trump and Sessions and the indictments and the arrests that have already been effected, all the chief executive officers, corporations that have resigned, the pedophilia arrest, all of this is one big plan. And QAnon said something a couple of weeks ago that made perfect sense to me. He said 2018, you know, to avoid disruption and people getting hurt, you can't just have one big bang day of mass arrests and all of a sudden it just collapses and whatever. That would be an absolute desperation move by the good guys. But this year, 2018, what we are seeing is a death by a thousand cuts. And that's exactly what you're seeing going on with everything I just mentioned. And Rod in particular, that's a pretty deep cut. It don't get no deeper than that. And so I wanted to bring that to your attention. You guys really should check that out. This is incredibly exciting news. And I think, as my opinion states, that this indicates another buckling of the U.S. Inc. And this is in a huge way because the U.S. Supreme Court has smelled the coffee and they pretty much opened the door. I mean, the barn door is open and the horses are running wild at this point. And I waited a long time to see how this was going to pan out. And Rod, God bless him, he's hung on throughout all these years, and he got done what he wanted to do. He started out in North Carolina, and he ended up before the Supreme Court and winning. So kudos to Rod, and good for us, because this is all related to taking back our republic. And that proves to you all about taking back your county, doing a COS, taking back your county. Let me say that again, take back your county, because Rod started at the county level. That's exactly where he started. And then he went to the state level. And Rod has elicited, if I remember correctly, there are 4 rulings by 4 judges that says that the U.S. is a corporation and that, you know, the statutes and codes don't apply to us. I mean, basically, that's huge. I mean, that's what we've been arguing. I mean, you know, the rash will just mumble, well, common law, it's all a fraud. It doesn't apply a lot. Rod did it the statutory way and proved to them with their own rules and regulations in their own ball court with their own ball that is true and shoved it up their butts. So I'm very excited. Okay, so I'm going to let that go because I'm going to start to mumble. And we're going to move into Chapter 10, the County Sheriff. All right, so County Sheriff is the conservator of the peace. The County Sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people and by oath as guardian of the people's unalienable rights secured by the Constitution. Constitution for the United States of America and its capstone Bill of Rights is the law of the land. In all statutes and state constitutions repugnant to the Constitution for the United States of America are null and void. If the sheriff lacks a full understanding of the Constitution, which is common law, it would stand to reason that he is vulnerable to violation of his oath in that he may not recognize and comprehend when judges and politicians violate the common law, thus making himself technically guilty of treason. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriff cannot be diminished by those in the legislatures and courts, nor can it be diminished by any state constitution. When it comes to enforcing the law, which is to say enforcing the Constitution for the United States of America, the sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer, answers to the people. No one else, not even the governor. Like any other elected official, the sheriff cannot be removed from office by another elected official. He can only be removed by the people at the ballot box or by recall or by indictment by the grand jury. SCOTUS said, and when I say SCOTUS, I mean the United States Supreme Court, SCOTUS said, the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of the criminal and civil courts of record, common law courts, such as serving process, summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. The sheriff, being the law enforcement, chief law enforcement officer and the highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected, is under the obligation to secure the peace. He answers to the people alone. Unlike the state police, the code enforcement officers, serving the state and answering to the governor. And unlike city, town, and village police, who are also code enforcement officers, serving the corporate municipalities, answering to commissioners or mayors. All these officers have a conflict of interest because they have no constitutional authority or concerns. They serve the system of codes and statutes instead of upholding the Constitution and serving the people, whereas the sheriff reports directly to the people, not the corporate municipalities. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the county sheriff as a constitutional officer are, at a minimum, the same as they were when the state constitutions were originally written. I've often mentioned in my own regard, to go back and dig out, where possible, the organic constitution of your state. Because there is nothing that the corporations can say or do or prove in their legal fiction that overrides the organic laws of your organic constitution in your state. And I encourage everybody to do that, to go find the organic constitution in your state and read it. Get to know it. You will find some amazing things. I absolutely guarantee it. Okay. When a sheriff or a U.S. marshal consults a bar attorney, and notice, I'm going to point this out too. Notice when we speak, we talk about U.S. Marshals versus federal, and there's a little bit of a difference there. And in this context, we're talking about a U.S. Marshal and not a federal. Federal is corporate. U.S. is us, the people, the Constitution. So be careful when you throw that phrase around, and be careful not to confuse the two. Words are important. When a sheriff or a U.S. marshal consults a bar judge, a bar attorney, or a bureaucrat to ask whether the judge, attorney, or bureaucrat is acting outside of the authority, the sheriff is doing something no different than consulting the fox as to whether the fox is raiding that house. If the sheriff cannot ascertain whether a judge or any other government servant is abusing his powers, thereby violating the unalienable rights of the people, without asking that servant whether he is doing so, how can the sheriff perform his duty? And this is something that I've been hammering local sheriffs about in a big, huge way. If a politician, judge, or prosecutor violates the Constitution, it is the duty of the sheriff and the U.S. Marshal to call the grand jury and ask the people for an indictment. This is the sheriff's responsibility. Were the sheriff to seek permission of a prosecutor or judge for an arrest of a politician, judge, or prosecutor whom the sheriff finds in violation of the Constitution, the sheriff would be disempowering his own authority. He would be functioning as a tool for the very ones violating the Constitution. He would thereby be violating his own oath. Obviously, then, no politician can come between the sheriff and the people. That is huge. Regardless of what they have been taught, it is the duty of the sheriff to seek an indictment, not the prosecutor. A big error in today's world, by the way. Prosecutors call a grand jury when the state has an issue, but the people's business is the sheriff's business, and it is the sheriff's duty to protect the people from those who would encroach upon their rights. Likewise, the courts were designed to exist for the purpose of serving and protecting the people from criminals and tyrants. What the sheriff needs to realize is that all states, cities, towns, and villages in America have been moving towards corporatism. That is to say, they have corporate charters, and that the police forces, such as state police, city police, town police, and village police, work for the corporation, not the people. They are hired by the corporate municipality to uphold codes, not the Constitution. They are code enforcement officers, not law enforcement officers, and it is the duty of the sheriff to know when the people within his county are suffering violation of their unalienable rights by code enforcement officers, and if he fails that duty, then the county is lawless and the sheriff is to blame. The sheriff works for and answers to the people alone. His sole duty is to protect the unalienable rights of the people within his county and within the courts against police brutality, tyrannical judges, and abusive government agencies. Sheriffs rarely perform duties we will now embark upon, to duties that they are actually elected to exercise, because they are, unfortunately, constitutionally ignorant. Sheriff is to make sure the due process of law is met before any arrest or seizure by police enforcement within his county and before any execution of judgments. That is huge. And this is how, of course, as we now know, in every case, everywhere, all the time, in any jurisdiction, doesn't matter what or who, we are denied, we have violations of due process of law. We know this. And I have hammered this in the faces of several county judges quite a few times, and they are not going to walk away from this at all. Okay, even a U.S. Marshal or other federal agent cannot execute a warrant of any sort within a county without first notifying the sheriff. Well, we know that is technically true, but unless the sheriff knows what we're discussing and learning here tonight, well, that ain't going to happen. And the sheriff needs our backing. He's not going to stick his head out there unless he knows he's got the backing of the people. And the backing of the people comes from our committees of safety, taking back our county and getting 20 or 30,000 people in the county that the sheriff can call up on the phone with guns to come up on their posse comitatus and help him out if he gets in a pinch. It's huge. That's why we have to take back our counties. And it is the duty of the sheriff to make sure due process and laws met before allowing a code enforcement officer, a U.S. Marshal, or other federal agent to proceed. So the point here is if you wanted to cut back on all the federal crap going on in your county, the sheriff can do it. And the sheriff ain't going to do it unless he knows he's got the backing of the people. And you get the backing of the people by starting a committee of safety and taking the county back. So the actual solution, sometimes people don't understand the process. When we say, you know, it's all about taking back the county, if you take back your county and you get the sheriff on board, the sheriff can take care of the feds. You didn't have to go to Washington. You didn't have to fight a mayor. You didn't need Congress. You didn't need any of that. You did it right in your own backyard with your frickin' sheriff. This is why when we got our head on straight, the NLA is now working to create these committees of safety. We always had it right. We always had it right at the county level. And we were talking about county level common law grand juries. I've mentioned prior it was a miserable failure because we couldn't get the sheriffs on board. Well, I've already talked in this conversation several times how you get the sheriff on board. But the point is, if you want to take care of everything through the state level and the federal level, you start in your county and you start with your committee of safety and you build up 20 or 30,000 people to back the sheriff. That's how it's done. And that will be true for years to come, even after restoration. Remember, we've had this conversation. Okay, the mass arrests have occurred. The global currency reset has happened. The RV has happened. All the bad guys from the top of the food chain down to governor have been arrested. Now what? Now what is you and your county have to pick up the ball and run with it? And you're going to have to do it one way or the other. And I've mentioned several times those committees, those counties that have committees of safety will be faster to get your county back online and headed under common law in the direction it should have always been than others. So it doesn't matter if this is before or after the restoration, this is still going to have to be done. It's still going, the people, you, me, us, are still going to have to go into the county and clean it up. Only this time, we're on the other side of the restoration. Common law is now the law of the land. The statutes and codes are not in our way. And we will be quickly able to discern whether the sheriff is a bad guy and getting arrested or replaced, or he's going to get on board. So we have a couple of things in our favor, meaning common law and quite possibly the sheriff, now free to do what he's always wanted to do but felt constrained to do because he lacked the backing of the people and he had to fight the statutes and code. But no matter which way you look at it, my friends, this is going to have to be done. So what we're talking about with committees of safety and taking back the county is good info for years to come. Yeah, wonderful things are going to happen at the global level and the national level, but we are still required to clean up our backyards. So all of this information is information that hopefully, A, you will acquire, because, B, you have to share it with your friends and neighbors in your community. There's no way around this. It's got to happen. This is the future. I'm not some kind of witch or soothsayer. I'm not predicting the future. I'm telling you this is what's coming and is in process, so be advised. Okay, so I did get to through all of that, so we get to the next page. Okay, so now we talk about... Actually, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stop right there. It's 8:30, and we'll pick up with arrest warrants next week. And so I am going to yield and open the floor, and I would love to discuss anything Rod Class, D.C. gun case, or sheriff-related. I yield.
I'd like to make an announcement before it goes in to all that. I have had to move my website from the domain where it was, and because of issues with the webmaster of that domain, I've had to change the name of my website, at least temporarily. And it is now called COS Formation, COSFORMATION.com. The old site, committee.org, is still on the internet, but it may not be very much longer. So that's all I wanted to put out.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And for those of you that don't know, Robert has some awesome information on his site. And early on, when Mickey and I first started doing these calls, especially in regards to the history of committees of safety, where do you think I got the information? I got it from Robert's site. It's an awesome site, and it's chock full of good information and good ideas. So be advised and take a look at that as well. How you?
Well, it is. You know, the information there comes from the old document, so it's factual.
Captain John, would you tell me how to tune into your tri-state meeting on Wednesday nights, please?
Yeah. Okay. Let me go over there. Let me go over here. Here, I'm almost there. Blah 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 blah. This is it. Let me double check. No, that's not. Yeah, well, something else. I guess we'll be listening here because we changed numbers and I should be deleting that. Yeah, here we go. 605-475-3250, same number. And the PIN is 973-684. Okay, and there's another thing here I'm looking for.
You said 973-684?
973-684, yeah. Thanks. Now, we use freeconferencing.com, and You can in by computer. I call in on Wednesdays. I still haven't done that. This call, I'll get around to that one day. Yeah. But freeconferencing.com and the meeting ID with Free Conferencing is 941-227-403. So meeting ID is 941-227-403.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. Yeah, I like using Free Conferencing. It's so much better than a free conference call. And there's a couple of major benefits. Number one, you can see who's on the call. So you can tell how many people are on the call, and you know who's on the call. So I find that quite useful. And the chat function is immensely valuable. For example, if I had dialed in with the computer on this call, I could post Robert's website address right there in the chat. And so when we talk about important information, people ask for phone numbers or website addresses or pictures or documents, you can post them right there in the chat and everybody can see that. Plus, we can do screen share so I can show you what's up on my computer. So free conferencing is something you might want to take a look at. And, it's free. It's, you know, it's on the Internet.
John?
So I just wanted to mention that. Yeah.
John, do you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did he ask about the Wednesday night call?
Yes.
That's the incorrect information.
Okay, good for me. I got it wrong. So scratch all of that.
Yeah, the call-in number is 515-604-9835, and the PIN is 339-449, and it is freeconferencecall.com.
Okay, so I got absolutely nothing right there, just so you know.
Yeah. Nothing. And if you're interested in the playback number, it's area code 515-604-9682.
And what's the free conferencing ID? Wasn't it common law grand jury 1 or something?
11.
11. So the meeting ID, if you go in through free conferencing, CLGJ, all lowercase, common law grand jury, the number 11, no spaces. CLGJ 11.
And the call-in number, not the playback, but the call-in number is, one more time, please.
515-604-9835.
Thank you very much.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Eric in Georgia.
That's what I thought. Would you like
yeah.
Would you like me to add you to my email I send out every week?
Oh, you know, I'd really appreciate that. Yes, I would. Thank you.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you now.
Okay.
Yeah, we put out for the Tri-State members and anyone else who wishes to be added to Gary's list, we put out an email every week. We've got, you know, we cover a little bit on what the Monday night call was, and Gary will put in links to different stuff. And of course it has all the meeting dial in and call up numbers and pins and such. So if you want to get on the mailing list, now's a good time because Gary's got his pen ready.
Well, I've got his email. What's your last name, Eric? Okay, I'll think of it.
I'm sorry, I was muted. Yeah, you got my email. We've communicated back and forth. It's my full name at Gmail.
Okay. I can't remember your last name right offhand. I know what it is, but I can't think of it. If you don't want to give it out, I can look it up. I got the list. I can look it up.
Yeah, I'd rather not. I'm just paranoid about these folk. But I got your email. I can just send you a reminder, and I got your number too, so I can just send you a reminder one way or another, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, send me an email, then I'll make sure I got it right.
Very good. Thank you.
And for those of you that may not have been on our call last night, Gary did some of his best work ever in covering the preamble to the Constitution. He missed a good call. He really did an excellent job. And so our calls are on the NLA website in the archives so that you can go back and listen to them anytime you want. Okay, well, maybe we get back to Rod Klass's case or the sheriff stuff. Next.
So they sealed the record on that, huh?
Oh, yeah, quite some time ago. Oh, yeah. They can't have that stuff bandying about.
Subversion. Fraud? What is that? Hiding?
Well, this is more like a legal nuclear bomb.
I know that's Rogers.
Rogers took down the whole construct from square one to square last. If you're familiar with Rod Klass, he's incredibly detail oriented and an amazing wizard of the statutes and codes. So that was the other point I wanted to make earlier. I keep trying to tell you people, the statutes and codes are worthless. Give it up. I've told you other ways to go. But if you're going to attempt it, then that's what you need. You need 23 years in the trenches, having been falsely arrested. They tried to murder you and make a plea deal and go to the Supreme Court and win. So that's, you know, if you're on that level, then by all means, use the statutes and codes. If you're one sliver below that, don't do it.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Hello, Crystal.
How's everybody? Well, I have some news for you. This is what happened in our state, and they kept this hushy-hushy. Some big developer, and I guess he was affiliated with Crazy Mayor and Trump and all the rest of them, he tried to attempt suicide, I guess, 2 days ago, jumping off the highway, and they saved him. And then, I guess, yesterday morning, he jumped in front of the metro, and he was killed instantly by a train. And it was on the front page of our paper, which I don't get to see the paper, and they didn't even have it on the TV station. But I when I was at the doctor, everybody was talking about how, you know, I guess with all these, something about a lot of the foreclosures, and he was a huge developer and all this other stuff. But I did a lot of crazy things that are happening here with the courts and everything. So,
another one bites the dust. And another one gone. Yeah. Another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
I might add, John, that setting up a committee of safety is a cakewalk compared to fighting statutes and codes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I said setting up a committee of safety is far less risky and simpler than fighting with statutes and codes.
Oh, yes. And another thing, too, I mentioned, all these policies, every last one of them, they all should have a sworn notarized affidavit on any bill that they pass, so we, the taxpayers, stop being liable for their mistakes. Now, because it's ridiculous, and I mean the tax is it's just horrible what's been happening. And so we're just trying to work on getting the committees built in the schools and for the students and what have you, you know, because it's like people are paying attention and now they're beginning to wake up. So. And I
have those are the people that you want to take and form a committee of safety.
Committee of safety?
Yep.
Okay.
You can call it whatever you like. We've gone through the name game before. I don't care if you call it Minutemen, Neighborhood Watch, I don't care, Buffalo Riders, I don't care what you call it. But getting the
like
getting the committee of safety
right.
together, so you, as I stated earlier in the call, you're going to have to do this one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way around it. You can't get around it. The sooner you do it, the better you like it. There is
the
no avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to take back your county. Nobody in your county right now is in a position. There's no group, no organization that's doing it. I mean, I can speak from my own experience because we've traveled around. We've looked at constitutional groups. We've looked at militias. We've looked at Oath Keepers. We've looked at 3%ers. We've looked at Tea Party people. And none of those groups, zero, zip, nada, have the knowledge
to
take back their county. They all have, you know, their use. They have, they can all be called upon to assist. But none of those groups have the slightest clue what's going on, the big picture, and how to take back a county. That's only going to be done through a group such as a committee of safety. Not going to happen. Because they don't have the knowledge.
One of the things, if I may, Mayor
Ford. Okay.
piggyback on what Crystal was mentioning, you know, it's good for people to realize that we are actually, we the people, are actually the creditors to their debt, because everything that they do is based on the good faith and credit of the American people. That will empower a lot of people to say, hey, you know, they might have something here because my house is what they're taking from me and this, that, and the other thing, and I am the creditor. Everything that they do, even to the printing of notes, is based on the good faith and credit of the American people. And with that, I yield.
Absolutely. The other thing, I don't know whether I spoke because I think I fell asleep the night before. But anyways, what was in the papers here also, I got to know. I don't receive the papers. They, because the people are going off on the politicians and the attorneys here. I guess they've been meeting, you know, and the last meeting they didn't even let me know about because, because as I said, they seen me in court and what have you. And so I got a call after it had occurred, and I'm like, I was trying to find out what had happened. But anyways, there was something in the paper, which I did not see it, but I received a call. And they stated, they said, in the event if your mortgage was changed, it's called, and they scanned your mortgage or changed the title or who, you know, whoever is your new mortgage and you did not sign, you are to write back to them, I do not accept, where is the contract? This is not a legal contract. You know, and you want the proof. So that was in the paper. I said, you got to be kidding.
Unconscionable and adhesive, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
Unconscionable and adhesive contracts. Yep.
Right. And so they said, if you do not have a contract, it is not legal. And I said, well, and that's what I was saying. I said, who signed the contract? So we put that paper that together, and I'll get that typed up, and I will get that over to you tomorrow to John. So this way, you know, and all the paperwork that we've been filing through. So you just, but it is exciting. People are coming together, and they want to learn. But as I said, they're like,
don't worry.
They want me. I said, huh?
Don't worry. No, me too.
Well, I wanted to dovetail off of something Nikki said. I mean, it's quite easy for someone like myself in particular. So when, you know, Nikki mentions that we're the creditors and they're the debtors, it's like, it's easy to say, well, so what? Who cares? What are you going to do about it? Well, here's what you're going to do about it. And they're called the CAFR accounts, Comprehensive Accounting Financial Report. And this is the secret behind the secret. This is the story behind the story behind the story. And you know I've railed on this before in earlier calls. I have told you, no town, no county, no state, no federal agency is short of money. Ain't nobody broke. Ain't nobody bankrupt. That's a lot of horse hockey. And it has to do with the Comprehensive Accounting Financial Reports. And believe it or not, the history behind it, I'm not going to get into this deeply, just quickly, the federal government and in turn the state and local governments learned how to keep two sets of books from Al Capone. Al Capone's accountant is where all of this started, believe it or not. You can't make this stuff up. And so my point is, when you go take your county back and you find out about the Comprehensive Accounting Financial Reports, more commonly referred to as CAFR, I'm not going to say that all over again, they're CAFR accounts. When Nikki says we're the creditors and they're the debtors, it's real simple. You got to pay us back. Well, the money's in the CAFRs. And I'm going to, before I yield here, I'm just going to go through numbers that I had for 2012, because I'm going to bump this up to the federal level. And every penny earned in 2012, I believe the number came out to like $5.7 trillion. That's every penny, every dollar, every dime, every nickel made in the United States in 2012. $5.7 trillion. That's with a T, Tom. And there are CAFR accounts, well, these, and there are investment accounts from the CAFR money that the federal corporation has. And in 2012, that year, the interest, are you sitting down? The interest off of these accounts that were funded by CAFR money was around $11.5 trillion. That's significantly double every penny made in this country. And so when Nikki says we're the creditors and they're the debtors, and I say so what, that's so what. The money is in these accounts that you never even heard of. It's all there, okay? And by going through the CAFR accounts, you can find it. And you can do that with a county committee of safety. I have mentioned to people before that at least in Illinois, if I started dealing into the Illinois CAFRs, well, I wouldn't be on these calls because they would have killed me already. That's how big this is. But the point is, that's what all that money is. So when I tell somebody that's not aware of reality that taxes don't matter, they don't go to run anything. They only told you over and over again. They go to the Queen of England and the Vatican. That's where your frickin' tax money goes to. But everything that is done in the way of services, to fix a road or build one or a bridge or whatever, it all comes out of these CAFR accounts, and everybody's, you know, all public officials but got relatives on construction companies, and you understand the system and how it all works. But it's run through these CAFR accounts. And you can take, you know, you could, if you had a committee of safety in your county and you had 20,000 people on your team and you had a sheriff on you, you could FOIA those CAFR accounts. You could get them. And you'd start to see why your county says it's broke, but it's not. You know, last year or the year prior, the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and this was a huge national story. Some of you should have heard of this one. They wanted to raise some fees. I don't remember the exact details, but they wanted to raise a bond issue. They wanted to raise some big money. And they found a CAFR account for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Now, this is a freaking university. This is not a county. This is not a town. This is not a state. This is the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And they found they had over $1.5 billion in their CAFR account. You're beginning to get the picture here. So like I said, when I tell people we have never had a need for taxes, now you understand just a wee bit why that's true. You don't need taxes. Never needed taxes. There ain't no need for taxes on nothing. And it all gets back to what Nikki said. We're the creditors, and they're the debtors. And with that, I yield.
And to search out who is the brokers in your area, look for who's behind, or not who's behind, but who's running the municipal authorities, because the municipal authorities, you may find that they have the power to float bonds, bundle them, and monetize them through a bank and the Federal Reserve for pennies on the dollar. So find out who's the broker in your area for the CAFR accounts.
Another thing on those CAFRs, the real term is Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. But anyway, that's why you have all these new schools that they want to build and everything, because they finance them. And then they come to you and they say, we need more taxes to support the building of the school. So they're making money on both ends. They're taking money out of your pocket, and they're making money on the other end. So it's a very serious thing that happens. But I think what most people have to do is realize that your future's at stake. Your life depends on stopping the coup that's going on.
Absolutely.
What the cabal is doing is a life and death matter for all Americans. Our lives depend on stopping this coup. We have to stop it, and the best way to stop it is get active in your communities. We got the tools all available on NLA and utilizing the notice of liability. You can take back your community, and quite quickly. But you have to take action. You have to understand that we're not going to have another chance at this. If we don't win, it's over. And your kids and your grandkids and those yet to be born are not going to have a life. They will not have the chance we got. And our chances were very slim until Trump got in. And we've got what appears he's moving in the right direction in most cases. And so if he's going to do what he says he's going to do, and I believe he is, and he points at us every speech almost and says, we need you. He needs us, and he needs us to take back our communities. And it's a serious, serious thing we're dealing with. It's not just a game. It's for all the marbles. With that, I yield.
Yeah, and I'm going to grab on that last deal here. I'm going to bump this up a notch here. When Gary said it's for all the marbles, we talk about our counties. We talk about our states. We talk about the federal government. We talk about our union. But understand, this is for all the marbles. And that means everything on the planet. And that means we are working to save every human. We're working to save our species and our planet. That's the deal. This is all or nothing game. Winner takes all. There's no compromise. Either they go down or we go down. And it's absolute 100% destruction either way. Either they go down absolutely 100% or we do. This is for our species and our planet. So I'm bumping this up a notch. All the good work that we do, all of the efforts that we put in, starting at the county, have ripple effects. You've heard the butterfly effect. You know, throw a pebble in the water, watch the ripple go out. We have an effect on our species and our planet. And this is the game. I don't often talk about it because we have things that we need to focus on at a local level, because we know that's how it gets done. That's what the hell these calls are all about. But because Gary mentioned the words, all the marbles, I was champing at the bit to mention, I want to remind you, this is for our species and our planet. We don't walk away from this loss. We do not walk away from this loss. We have to win. And with that, I yield.
And I'll add something more to that. Every day that we sit on our butts and wait for someone else to do this, someone else to put it together, every day we do that, they're killing off people by spraying the skies, by vaccinating our children. They're constantly eating at us, and every day is a death loss. We need to take action, and it needs to be now. I yield.
And along those same lines, in 2009, September 2009, you can look on the internet and you'll see Wall Street investing in death. There was an article written that Wall Street investors were chomping at the bit to take out insurance policies on the people, okay, and go along with the health care, the ACA. The younger the people die, the more money they make. It's on the internet. sometimes truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah. Well, that's what I toss in. No matter how much knowledge you have, no matter how much you understand the big picture, in the end, it's far worse than you can frickin' imagine. And Gary and Nikki are right. I mean, you know, every day that we delay, every day that we don't make an effort, somebody dies. The people that died of cancer, they didn't have to die of cancer. That's murder. The people that died of respiratory diseases and the flu, that's murder from the chemtrails. The people that are dying of their organs failing from eating GMO, that's murder. People dying from congestive heart stuff because of extreme low-frequency pulse microwaves, that's murder. And then you have the real obvious. You see some MK Ultra Mind Lab victim who's a Manchurian candidate walk into a school and actually shoot somebody. And that's where you recognize it's murder. So this blood is on the hands of the people that do nothing. That's not us. We're making an effort. We're doing the best we can. We're out there. We're on these calls. We're in our communities. That's not us. But the people that sit down and do nothing, that sit on the couch, they have, from my view, my opinion, my perspective, they have that blood on their hands. Because today, we have this information. We know. And I say ignorance in the age of information is a choice. And the choice they made murdered these people. And that's my point, and I yield.
And I want to challenge you on your point, John. Until I see committees of safety going in, I think we're guilty too. I yield.
Okay, anybody else?
Well, I can tell you, there is a cure for a lot of what is being done to us. And it's on a website, and it's called BarbaraFrank222.com.
Well, are you still there with us?
Yeah, I was trying to shut up my phone.
Oh, it was the phone. I didn't know if the NSA had cut you off and decided to do music.
Well, they do enough to me.
Sounded like an Alex Jones polished promo, actually. It was good.
Now, I have this lady on my natural healing call just before this call. And I've been having her on every week. And she has a worldwide following. She cures cancer. she cures fibromyalgia and everything else that you can think of, and the chemtrails and you name it. It's all natural. And that's her website is the BarbaraFrank222.com. She can even regrow your hair back if you're bald or whatever. She'll regrow your hair back on your body. And she is 69 years old. She's been doing this for 40 years. And it was passed down to her from her parents. And like I say, a worldwide following. Very successful. She's 69 and it looks like she's 30. Because she stops the aging. So, you might want to look up that website and get an idea about it.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Well, I'll just send some testimonials. For those of you that may not be familiar with holistic healing, I'm going to give you a couple of quick examples that I know of directly. And most of us have found our own way, and because of the unique frequency and vibration of our bodies, one particular approach, one cure, one holistic approach may not work well for you, and you need another, but it did work good on somebody else. Point being that I will tell you for a fact, starting back about 5-6 years ago, my girlfriend was going to die. I was going to lose her. And I was going to lose her because of COPD. And she was getting to the point she couldn't get off the couch and make it to the kitchen. And she was dying. And I absolutely refused to accept that. And we cured her COPD. Okay? That's according to white man's Western world, Western doctors, that's not curable. It's cured. It's been confirmed several times by her doctors over the last couple of years. It's been confirmed on Neil Keenan's healing machine. We also restored her kidneys, which were at 50% function. She just came back from the doctor 3 days ago, and this is years after we cured her kidneys as well. And the doctor said, yeah, your kidneys are just a tick under 100%. So we cured. We figured out our own way, muddling through. We cured her COPD, and we brought her kidneys back up to 100% function. And then we have our NLA member down in Indiana, Bob Cable, who was given 2 weeks to live. He was put on hospice. The doctor told him, get your affairs in order. You're going to croak. And Bob said no. And he found his own protocols. And he went through using cannabis oil, indigo sativa specifically, and vitamin C in massive quantities. He figured out his own protocol. So here we have three examples right up front, up close and personal, of cures at work. And so now Robert comes up with an individual that has been gifted with a whole lot of these processes that you don't have to muddle through the hard way like my girlfriend and I had to do and Bob had to do. You can go to a place, this is vetted information. That's the hard part, getting good information. Robert just vetted this. Go there. Learn this stuff if you have a need. If you've got a friend or a family member that's got a terminal illness, mentioned fibromyalgia. My girlfriend's daughter is an issue with this. I can't get her to do the cannabis oil. These things are real. And the funny thing is, they are ridiculously inexpensive compared to what the Western medicine is charging us. It is ridiculous. Ridiculously inexpensive. So that's the point I wanted to make. Go to these sites. Robert just vetted it. You know the information's good. I'm going to go to the site. I'm going to check it out. And I recommend that you guys do as well. And with that, I yield.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, and I can attest to it, because I've been sick for 35 years. I've had 5 cardiac arrests, cancer, comatose. I'm buying the second bout of cancer again. I've had 29 operations. And the doctors, they are shocked, even with my health, and I'm in my 60s, and the doctor said, you know what? They cannot believe that. They said, one met me like 21 years ago. I was almost 400 some more pounds. I was the high blood pressure, diabetes, everything, congestive heart failure. And I'm doing everything naturally. And this, especially with the second bout, the cancer, when I met Dr. Franks, I have been doing so well, and I've lost almost 100 pounds. And the stuff is not expensive. Yes, you know? We just need that, you know, whatever is out there, because God made our bodies from the earth. What's going to heal it from the earth? And that medication that these doctors was giving me, like for the cholesterol, I almost had a stroke with that, you know? And we just needed apple cider vinegar. So I'd rather deal with somebody who's doing all the natural stuff. What were you just, what did you just mention, Captain, about the...
Well, I was talking about cannabis oil.
The cannabis oil. Okay, and I just saw that, yeah, that's also very good, too. And these are the things I love to learn, and, you know, and because it's just like there's so much stuff out there that's good for us that, you know, I just heard something else, too, even like with the, it's the cream of tartar. Well, my mother used to use that old remedy, too, the cream of tartar. And lemon juice and water, hot water, and that brings your pressure right down. My mother did that 50 years up until she died. But I also heard something else really good about the cream of tartar. I believe it was cream of tartar, orange juice, and I think ginger and garlic. And that helps when people have addictions. It helps shrivel up the addiction and stuff like that. It almost cures your addiction, whether it's drugs, cigarettes, or whatever the case is.
Okay. So I'm going to steer this back to committees of safety here. If you had a committee of safety, if you were taking back your counties, then the holistic healers that live in your area, the ones that got grandma's recipes and got handed it all down, you would take the pressure off of them. You would get the big pharma thugs off of them. You would get the AMA off of them. You would get the insurance companies off of them. You would get all the bad guys that have been squeezing the holistic healers off of their backs, and all this information would be rippling through your community, and you'd be able to take care of your community members. This is all related. It is all related to taking back our counties. This is what we're talking about. And we just, I don't want to get off on a healing show and tears and whatnot. That's not the point. The point is to open up the doors, to free the path, to take the obstacles and obstructions out of the way so that this information can flourish in your community with healers in your community, because they're there. Every community everywhere has healers. This is not some secret. They've been around for thousands of years, and there's one in every community, if not many. And if the more we take back the community, the more this stuff will flourish. And that was my point. And I yield. Anybody else? Well, okay then. I think we've run her dry for the night. So thank you all for coming. And we will pick up next week with the sheriff. And I believe, let me pull it back up again. Where am I leaving off? I got to make a note so I can't forget. Arrest warrants. We will pick up next week under the sheriff chapter of our Constitution course with the page that starts out with all arrest warrants. And so I thank you all for coming, and have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Good night, everyone.